Welcome to Ekhatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekhatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we are immersing ourselves in a novel that is, well, it's as beautiful as it is unsettling, Yukio Mishima's 1956 masterpiece, The Temple of the Golden Pavilion, or Kinkakuji.
It's a powerful one. And you really can't discuss this novel without immediately addressing the author himself, Yukio Mishima, born Kimitake Hirayoka.
Right.
He remains one of the 20th century's most enigmatic literary figures.
Definitely enigmatic.
Yeah, his work, you know, Confessions of a Mask, the huge Sea of Fertility tetralogy. It's relentlessly focused on this tension.
What tension specifically?
Between sort of traditional Japanese values and encroaching modernity, this intense pursuit of beauty, and ultimately the necessity of action or death.
And that's what always looms large, doesn't it? His life and death, this search for an authentic life, ending in that incredibly dramatic, almost aestheticized suicide by seppuku in 1970.
It absolutely colors how we read him.
Yeah. And the Temple of the Golden Pavilion feels like such a key piece of the puzzle, you know, helping us maybe understand those lifelong obsessions.
It really is. And what gives the novel its powerful, chilling core is that it's fundamentally rooted in a real event, a shocking one.
The actual burning of the Kinkakuji Temple in Kyoto, 1950.
Exactly. A young Buddhist acolyte just set the revered structure alight, an act that completely stunned post-war Japan. Mishima took that incomprehensible act of cultural desecration and transformed it.
Into this, Misoguchi's disturbing, highly philosophical confession.
That's it.
And that confession is really our mission today. We're trying to unpack the psychological burden of absolute beauty.
Yeah.
How in Misoguchi's mind, the most perfect thing he knows becomes something he feels he has to annihilate.
Just to feel like he can exist himself.
Right, to gain control.
And the setting is just so crucial here. You have to remember, this is post-war Japan.
A country really.
Completely. Reeling from defeat, cultural upheaval, and we're dropped right into the consciousness of Misoguchi, this deeply isolated, stammering young man.
Whose whole life becomes consumed by this one symbol, the temple.
It's everything. For him, the Golden Pavilion isn't just architecture. It's it becomes the ultimate psychological barometer of his failure or his perceived lack of ability to engage with life.
Okay, so let's trace that back. How did this obsession even start? It begins with an idea, really, doesn't it? Long before he even gets there.
Precisely. It starts with his father, Mizuguchi's father, a poor country priest in a remote village. He basically indoctrinates his son, fills his head with these poetic, almost spiritual descriptions of the temple's incomparable beauty.
So it's built up as this abstract, flawless ideal.
Exactly. Setting an impossible standard for reality before he's even laid eyes on it.
And then his father dies, which must leave Misoguchi completely adrift.
Utterly alone. Socially awkward. Severely hampered by that stutter. And just clinging to this notion of perfection that only exists in his imagination.
So when he finally arrives at the temple, what happens? The reality must hit hard.
Oh, the psychological tension is immediate. He's expecting, I don't know, transcendence. But the reality is kind of dull, pragmatic, disappointingly earthly.
How so?
Well, the temple itself is struggling. The superior who runs it is more concerned with what Mishima calls worldly accommodation.
Which means?
Basically bringing in tourists, making practical compromises to keep things running in the post-war economy. It just falls so far short of the spiritual, perfect vision his father implanted in him.
That initial disillusionment, it sounds like the real starting point for a spiral. But if the physical temple let him down, why didn't he just walk away? Why cling to the ideal so hard it becomes toxic?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? He couldn't leave the idea.
Yeah.
The temple becomes less about the actual building and more about his own internal state, his reflection, almost.
Because he feels so alienated already.
Completely. His severe stutter, his physical appearance, they isolate him. He can't engage normally with the world. He even says later, quite starkly, that his stutter is the external manifestation of my inability to live.
Wow.
So the Golden Pavilion becomes this container for all the perfection, all the beauty, all the wholeness he feels he lacks and can never achieve himself.
So in a way, the temple's very perfection highlights his own perceived failures. It sort of holds them in place.
You could say that, yeah.
He can't square that idealized inner world with the messy, compromised reality he sees, not just in the temple's management, but everywhere in post-war Japan. And somehow he blames the temple itself for blocking him.
It becomes the obstacle. The beautiful, immovable obstacle preventing him from acting, from loving, from living.
And his isolation just gets worse, especially when he meets Kashiwagi.
Kashiwagi, yes. Arguably the most destructive influence in the entire novel. A pivotal character.
Tell us about him. He's like this dark philosophical mentor, right? Giving Mizuguchi a kind of intellectual framework for his alienation.
He is. And he's such a brilliant contrast to Mizuguchi. Kashiwagi also has a severe physical limitation club feet. But unlike Mizuguchi, he hasn't retreated. He's weaponized it.
Weaponized it? How?
He projects this intense cynicism. He preaches that beauty is meaningless, that destruction is the only truly authentic act. And he actively manipulates people, especially women, by leveraging their pity or their morbid fascination with his disability.
So he turns his defect into a twisted kind of power.
Exactly, a perverse power. And he essentially teaches Mizuguchi to see the world through this nihilistic lens where, you know, the ultimate form of appreciation might actually be destruction.
That friendship sounds absolutely crucial. It gives Mizuguchi the language, the logic he needs to justify what's brewing inside him.
It absolutely supplies the vocabulary for destruction.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. While Kashiwagi's out there engaging, manipulating, Mizuguchi remains locked in failure. Especially with relationships.
We see that, don't we? These painful moments, his social and sexual anxieties are excruciating.
Yeah, like when he interrupts that intimate moment or that incredibly complex, tragic relationship he has with the geisha, Yuko.
Oh, so his failures just push him further inward, right? They're like nails in the coffin of his social self.
They really are.
Yeah.
If he can't connect with real people, his focus just intensifies, laser-like, onto the one constant, the temple. It becomes the ultimate scapegoat for his entire inability to live a normal life.
His inner world just becomes completely claustrophobic.
And that leads us into the middle section of the novel. It's this terrifying descent where the physical building almost dematerializes, becomes purely a mental concept.
Less wood and gold, more idea.
Yes. The Golden Pavilion stops being a structure and becomes what the source material aptly calls a psychological prison. A cage built from his own impossible ideals.
And Mishima makes this abstract obsession feel almost physical, doesn't he? There's that quote.
Oh, the one about pain.
Yes.
The beauty of the Golden Pavilion was something that I had to live with constantly, like a physical pain.
It captures that wheat perfectly. Living with perceived perfection is paralyzing for him.
Utterly paralyzing.
Right.
Because if the temple represents absolute, finished, static beauty, then Mizuguchi, who sees himself as imperfect, stuttering, flawed, alive, he can only exist in painful contrast to it.
So perfection itself eliminates the possibility of human action or creation.
For him, yes. In this context, it does, which connects directly to Mishima's wider philosophical interest, you know, destruction versus creation.
It's not just mindless vandalism he's contemplating.
Not at all. It's framed as a profound aesthetic choice, influenced heavily by Kashiwagi's ideas that perfect beauty prevents authentic living.
And therefore
it must be annihilated. To prove it existed paradoxically.
Yeah.
Or maybe just to clear space for his own existence.
Wow. And this resonates with certain traditional Japanese aesthetics too, doesn't it? Like the beauty of impermanence.
Very much so. That idea of no aware, the poignant beauty found in things that are fleeting, things about to perish.
But that's the ultimate paradox here, isn't it? The Golden Pavilion is meant to be permanent, enduring beauty.
Exactly. But for Mizuguchi, twisted by his obsession, the only way to truly appreciate or maybe even just see that beauty is to embrace the idea of its destruction, to make it finite.
Which brings us to another powerful line Mishima gives him. Nothing is more beautiful than a thing which is about to perish.
Right. The imminent destruction intensifies the beauty. And crucially for Mizuguchi, it creates an opening, a space for his action. If he can't create beauty, maybe he can create significance through its destruction.
This internal psychological logic, it inevitably leads him to the climax, doesn't it? He reaches the point of no return.
He's completely convinced now. This overwhelming, perfect symbol, the temple, it's a barrier, a spiritual block stopping him from asserting his own authentic, flawed self.
And so the act itself, the arson, July 2nd, 1950.
It's the culmination of everything we've talked about. His isolation, Kashiwagi's philosophy, his hatred of the superior's compromises, his inability to reconcile the ideal and the real. It's an act of ultimate, violent self-assertion.
The irony is just crushing. His intense love, his obsession, leads directly to its complete physical erasure.
The quest for fulfillment ends in this profound spiritual violation.
Yeah, but it's his reflection after the act, after the flames. That's what really sticks with you. It's so simple.
Deceptively simple. That three-word justification throws the whole narrative into a different light. He just states, I wanted to live.
So the question then becomes, if the temple's beauty was, in his mind, preventing him from living, does destroying it actually represent liberation for him?
Or is it just the final act of a broken mind?
Right. Is Mishima suggesting that when normal paths to authenticity are blocked by society, by personal flaws, by an overwhelming ideal, is destruction the only path left for some individuals to claim their existence?
It definitely challenges us, especially thinking about Mishima's own life and philosophy. For him, that pursuit of absolute beauty was always tangled up with action, and ultimately, with death. Mizoguchi's final self-assertion only comes through destruction. He moves from paralysis to action, however dark that action is.
Okay, let's zoom out a bit now. What are the enduring themes that make this novel such a classic, that keep us talking about it?
Well, first and foremost, that central tension, beauty and power.
How beauty isn't just benign.
Exactly. The novel argues that perfect beauty can create these impossible, paralyzing standards that actually diminish human life rather than enriching it.
And then there's the profound study of alienation. Misoguchi's journey is just this chilling case study.
Right. It shows the consequences of living entirely inside your own head. His psychological barriers, the stutter, the obsessive retreat, demonstrate how unchecked isolation can spiral into something radical, something destructive.
And we have to connect it back to the time period, too, that traditional versus modern values conflict.
Absolutely. The Golden Pavilion stands for traditional spiritual purity. The superior, with his business dealings and post-war pragmatism, represents modernity compromising that tradition.
So Mizoguchi's act becomes symbolic on that level, too.
You can definitely read it that way. A visceral protest, maybe? A symbolic destruction of a traditional purity that he felt was either already being tainted or was simply impossible to maintain in the modern world.
Mishima's technique is also key here, isn't it? The narrative style.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
It's all first-person confessional narration. We get total access to Mizoguchi's mind, his internal logic.
Which is compelling, even as it's horrifying.
Yes, but that structure immediately forces us to question his reliability, doesn't it? We're hearing the arsonist's own defense. They have to engage critically with his justifications.
And the symbolism runs so deep. The pavilion itself.
It's not just a building. It's a living metaphor for tradition, beauty, yes, but also psychological imprisonment. And think about the imagery Mishima uses.
Like its reflection in the pond.
Exactly. That creates these images of duality, distortion, perfectly mirroring Mizoguchi's own fractured, confused perception of reality versus the ideal he can't let go of.
The emotional impact is just intense. It's claustrophobic.
It really is. Mm. Mishima doesn't ask you to forgive Mizoguchi or even sympathize, maybe, but he forces you to understand, to follow the painful psychological steps that led to this horrific act.
Yeah, it definitely challenges comfortable ideas about beauty always being a positive force.
It makes you confront the dark side of aesthetic worship. Where does admiration end and obsession begin?
It seems the story reveals that the pursuit of perfection, or the worship of it, can often carry the seeds of its own destruction.
It makes you question where that line is. Where does worship end and tyranny begin?
Yeah.
The tyranny of the ideal.
And that tyranny, I think, is what Mishima forces us to look at the complex, sometimes terrifying forces driving us when we're confronted with something we perceive as absolute, whether that's beauty or truth or anything else.
A powerful, unsettling masterpiece, no doubt.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Apatra Foundation.